As a prelude to the talk, I'd like to read a passage from the suttas. It's a passage that became standard liturgy for the Theravadin tradition. It gets chanted in some places, monasteries, every day. I think it's a very wonderful little teaching about the Dharma, the practice. The Dharma is well proclaimed by the Blessed One. It is visible here and now, immediate, inviting to be seen for oneself, onward leading, to be personally realized by the wise. The Dharma is visible here and now, immediate, inviting to be seen for oneself, onward leading, to be personally realized by the wise. So whatever the Dharma is, it's to be found now, in this place here. And the word that's translated as immediate sometimes gets translated as timeless. But I think that that's a little bit confusing because it lends itself to almost a mystical interpretation. It's not of time, doesn't take time, because it's immediate, it's now. Inviting inspection. Whatever is happening here and now invites you to notice it. Invites you to be aware of it. Somewhere around 500 years or 600 years after Buddhism came to China, Chinese were trying to make sense of this huge amount of Buddhist teaching. It's a vast, vast corpus. And there was one great scholar teacher who summarized all of Buddhism in this little sentence. Liberation beckons us within everything. Liberation is everything you encounter is inviting you to be free. What a great summary. You better not miss anything. Everything you encounter, here and now, inviting inspection. And we create a very different condition if we accept the invitation to inspect, to study, to be open to. We create very different conditions if we receive the experience, take it in, as opposed to fix it, change it, improve on it, get rid of it, judge it. We create a very different condition if we blame, criticize, or even celebrate. Is this a volume loud enough for people? Okay. So we can create different conditions. And part of the emphasis in practice is to create the conditions that support us more than, I don't know how to say it exactly, but more than make the Dharma happen in us or make progress in the practice. We create the conditions for it. And it's a little bit counterintuitive to how some of us live, to not actively do things to make ourselves safer or to make ourselves better or to fix our problems, to not get rid of our things we're uncomfortable with, but rather to bring awareness to it. But even if we bring awareness to it, are mindful of our experience, it's too easy for that mindfulness, that effort, to be accompanied by all kinds of agendas we have, things we're trying to make happen, things that we're adding judgments and ideas and we're overlaying on top of it. And this emphasis on the immediacy of here and now is also an emphasis on being very simple with our experience. To be very simple with what's happening now and have the right conditions, create the conditions to receive it, conditions to be with it, so things unfold in a way that's supportive for us, that's liberating. When my son was younger, I played a lot of baseball catch with him. He loved it. And as he got older and stronger, the balls would come at me faster. And when he was young, we played a little kind of the soft balls, but as he got older, he insisted on playing the real hard baseballs. And they would come at me phenomenal speed, as far as I could tell, for me. So I had to learn how to catch them so my hand wouldn't hurt. And one of the things I learned to do was to catch them while my hand with the glove was moving away from the ball. Because if I was moving away from a ball, it wouldn't hit with as much impact. If I went towards the ball, it would hurt. But if I went backwards, then, you know, it wouldn't hit with the same level of impact. The speed basically was reduced, right, by how fast I was moving my hand back. So the task was to catch the ball, but I went in the opposite direction the ball was flying. So sometimes in practice, we don't want to think we're going forward. Sometimes it's better to kind of, I don't know if going backwards is the right word, we want to go in a different direction than how we normally live our lives, being efficient. And it has to happen on retreat, you know, because, I mean, it would be nice that if you could sit down, meditate for 10 minutes, and be done. Nailed that, you know. I mean, what a waste of time. You had 35 minutes, you could do something else. You know, what a waste. And, it takes time to let things unfold. It takes time for things to open and show themselves. It takes time for us to relax some of the conditioning that we're living by. And so, in a certain sense, it's not very efficient. And because of that, if the efficiency mode is operating, then we have to become patient. It's one of the very important conditions. For some people, it's the first condition they have to learn to practice well, is to be very, very patient, to give lots of space to things to unfold. And one of the conditions of practice is to receive the experience or allow yourself to register what's happening and not be in a hurry. For people who do mental noting, noting the experience, labeling it as it happens, powerful practice. But sometimes people do the checklist approach of noting. And something begins happening, you note it, and so you've done your responsibility, check that off, and now you can go on to the next thing, you know, and the next thing to think about, you know. And like sometimes when people do note the breathing, noting the in-breath that maybe is in, the beginning of the in-breath happens, they say in, check that off, and then the rest of the in-breath, they're on vacation. Nothing, you know, just they're kind of, I don't know what they do, but the mind has free rein to do whatever it wants until the beginning of the out-breath, and you check that off. Done that. But the idea is to receive, let the experience of each breath register. Let the effect, the influence of the movements of the breathing, let it feel what it does to you. Feel the experience. Similar to how if you're cold and you go stand in the sun, you don't just like feel the first little moment of warmth against you and say, oh, done that, and go back, you know, in the shade or in the cold. You stay there and you let it kind of sink in. You let it kind of permeate. You stay there long enough so that the heat can really, can feel it. And sometimes people just do that because it feels so good, like really savor it and let it, kind of the heat warm you up in a nice way. So that way of, you don't just only want to know cognitively what's happening, recognize what's happening. Whatever it is, you want to make space for it to really feel what it is. What is that experience? So if you are impatient, don't just know that you're impatient. Take the time to feel and sense, like the impatience of the sun, and you're going to take in that experience. What is this like? It might feel uncomfortable, but then feel the discomfort. Feel, oh, it's like that. I feel tight in my belly. I feel this rush of energy in my hands. I feel my head is racing a little bit, and I feel oppressed. You know, just feel it. Take time for it. If you notice that you're happy, you could, if you want, just check that off and go on to more important things. But, you know, notice happy, and then kind of almost like you get out of the way to let yourself, let the experience of happiness register inside of you, feel it. I like the idea of opening to it, the experience. But don't get in the way of it. Let it really be there. Let it have its time to show itself to you. If you're afraid, let the fear have time to be there and let it register. And if you do that, you create a certain condition. That kind of openness and allowance and willingness to feel creates a particular condition. It does create a little bit of stronger mindfulness. It does create a little bit of concentration because you're kind of staying present for something. But it also allows things to unfold, to move and to change, that are very different than if we're riding really close and tight on the experience. And even things which are, you know, difficult and maybe things that sometimes call like negative emotions or difficult, challenging states inside, they'll unfold very differently if you make room for them than if you close up around them. Joyful states unfold very differently if you make room for them than if you close up on them or if you ignore them. So to make space, allow them to be there. And one of the conditions that gets born when you open to the experience, allow it to be there, know it, but not just know it for the moment of just mental recognition. It's almost like the mental noting of the experience is the beginning of a small process of mindfulness. It's not the end of it. It's like opening the door so the breeze can come in, the window so the breeze can come in. So you feel the breeze, you feel what's there. You get to know what's happening. And but one of the conditions it sets up is the felt sense of that openness, that felt sense of a knowing and awareness that doesn't obstruct or condemn or tighten up around the experience. Ideally, a kind of simple knowing that doesn't, where you don't come along with your usual self-identity and ideas of I'm the doer, it's up to me, and I'm doing it wrong, and I better figure this out, or I'll have nothing to say during the interview with Gil, and you know, all kinds of complicated, all stuff comes along. But very simple, the sense of just simple awareness, simple, just this experience in its raw simplicity. And so to appreciate that in that moment of awareness, in that moment of openness, there's something that's very pleasant, very nice, very, maybe feels good. So even if what's happening to you is very unpleasant, you might be having from your point of view, the worst sitting of your meditation of your life. And from the point of view of your teacher, that's the best sitting, great. Because for us teachers, we have very different criteria than you often do. I'm so happy for you. Wow, really? That's finally happening? It's finally coming through? Wow. That must be really painful, but wow. I'm so happy for you. I mean, where in the world can you show up and tell someone how miserable you are? And oh, great. So make space and let it come and be very simple with it. Trust it. And so that condition of being this open awareness creates, in and of itself, is a nice condition. It's a nice thing. I would like to think you can be nourished by it, nurtured by it, supported by it, protected by it. It's a great thing. It's very closely the idea of not being in conflict with what is happening. Not being in contention with what's happening. And I prefer that kind of language of not being in conflict to the language of accept what's happening, practice acceptance. Because I don't know if everything should be accepted. And it lends itself to some idea that, kind of a global idea that everything is supposed to be okay. But there are things that shouldn't be accepted that you don't have to, but you can also not be in conflict with it. And let it be an awareness there. And with an awareness that has no conflict, then it's easier to have the wisdom to know what to say yes and what to say no to. But the mind doesn't have to contract. The heart doesn't have to contract. So we're learning a skill, an ability to stay present and open to whatever is happening. And the 10,000 times you do that on a retreat, 10,000 times that you open to knee pain. Oh, what's this like? Feel the knee pain, be with it. And then you have to do it again a few moments later. Okay, so knee pain, let's feel it for a moment. Or discouragement, or whatever it might be. You're training yourself, you're conditioning yourself, you're learning a skill of how to do that over and over and over again. It's like developing a muscle. And it might feel like inconsequential here. I mean, what's so great about a knee pain? But to use that as the place where you develop that ability, you go out of here, or something might happen that's really big, really challenging. And you've learned how to do that, to be there with it, not react, not succumb to the old habits, not to throw dishes across the kitchen, the person you're arguing with, but just kind of be there and let your wisdom and understanding and to be there and see what's going on. What's going on here? I've had the great good fortune of having people angry with me. That wasn't good fortune, but the good fortune of having people who are angry with me and have the ability to stay there and be present and let that and register what that whole experience is like. Oh, this is like. And there were a couple of times in my life where I just was kind of fascinated by people furious at me. Usually they don't have, you know, good cause, but you know, that's easier then. The first time it really happened dramatically was on one of these retreats I was teaching, and I'd set up a special meeting with someone outside of the usual schedule, and I was supposed to give the Dharma talk that evening. So I was back in my room preparing, and I forgot. So, you know, what's the big deal? You know, on retreat, you just walk and sit, and, you know, and just practice, and if there's no meeting with the teacher, well, you set up another time, because it didn't show up. I thought, I mean, I forgot, right? So, but the person was absolutely furious. So we had to meet to talk about it, and we sat for an hour. I was sitting this way, cross-legged, she was sitting, and I was curious how long someone can have a monologue, how long someone could carry on a monologue, an angry monologue. And I got more and more interested. It was like, you know, and what was this like? And I had lots of time to, it was less than an hour. So I had lots of time to kind of feel what it's like to be in the recipient end and let it receive it and be with it and open to it. And finally there was the supper bell happen. So there's a saying in Buddhism, saved by the bell. So then I excused myself. And the next day she said to me, "Gil, that was so helpful. Everyone else runs away from my anger." She'd never had the experience of someone who stayed present. And I think that it was a very big learning thing for her. This simple thing, learning how to do this, to be open and present. It's a powerful thing to do. So to not be in conflict with what is. Also, the idea of being, noticing what's happening in the present moment, in the immediacy of now, and then opening to that experience, feel it more fully, see it more clearly, is also, I think of it as an act, a silent act. It's not a discursive act. So, you know, if you stand in the sun to get warm, it's not a discursive act that you think about. It's something you silently, with your body, feel the warmth as it comes in. And if you really want to enjoy the warmth, you know, you don't want to be thinking about all the problems you've had and difficulties you've had with people. And, you know, you can get pulled away into this thought world. And then you miss the fact that this nice feeling, you're still getting warm, but you miss feeling, enjoying it, being with it. So I like to think of this, it's a silent awareness. There is the cognitive recognition, oh, this is warmth. But that's only a small part. We want to feel it, be there. The samadhi of warmth, the receptivity of this experience. So I think of it as a silent registering, a silent sensing, opening to. And this can be a very settling thing to do, to listen with silence, to hear, to feel, to be with silence. And it's very respectful, I think, because it makes room. Busy mind doesn't have much room for things. So it makes room for something else to happen. And to learn to trust the Dharma, to trust the unfolding that's not of our making. It makes this whole process a lot easier. Be here with this experience. And then part of the reason to slow down on retreat, some people walk slower and just eat slower and do their various things slower, is not because being slow makes you more virtuous and spiritual. But when you go slow, it tends to be easier to really register and feel more fully the experience you're having. Really be with it. So walking down the steps from here to this floor to downstairs, you know, you could, you know, go down quickly and hardly notice you walked. Or you can really let the walking register, oh, this is what it's like to walk. Feeling the texture of the carpet on the feet, you know, as you walk down, the little rough texture. Or if you're holding the railing, the smoothness of it, or the movements of your muscles. What does it feel like? What does it feel like to go downhill, down the steps, and feel a shift of gravity versus going uphill where you're going against gravity? Just really be there for it. Sense it. So many things you can kind of be with and feel. And to allow that world of direct sensory experience, direct sensing and being, become kind of the world you live in, swim in and feel, be with, for a short while. Meaning, for the retreat, for an hour, for a day, for a period. Given the overall time of how long you've been alive and doing the opposite, doing other things, you're not going to do it for very long. It's not like, you know, you're not going to miss out. You're going to have lots of time to solve all your problems discursively. It's not going to go away. You know, you leave the retreat, there'll be lots of chances again to review the past and come up with a better past. Lots of time to plan for the perfect future. There's no shortage of time. You'll have lots of time. It's not like a big sacrifice to, you know, for these days, to, like, you know, put that aside. Just be here with this experience. Yesterday I talked about this, the flow of practice, the unfolding of it down the hill, the rain, the water that flows. And one of the places where this process is described, it says it begins with, it says it begins with suffering. But if, because it's sometimes said all of practice begins with our suffering, our dukkha. But then, in experience and contact with our challenges, there can arise faith. And I like to use the word trust. To have faith in the process, to have trust in the process of practice, the process of showing up and practicing being here with this. And this is a very important condition that supports this unfolding. To trust. And I think it's so profound, this idea of trusting the practice. For me, it's trusting being present for life. Trusting life. And it's not an easy thing to do, but I think it's one of the consequences of practicing for some time, is really beginning to trusting the inner, innate process that unfolds if we're really here for it, really here. And then to offer you a little incentive or carrot to help you try to put aside some of the things that you're thinking about a lot, big kind of knots of your life that you're trying to resolve, is that probably it's important to resolve them. But sometimes it's really helpful to put them aside temporarily so that you can get much more settled, so you can get into a deeper experience of the present moment, really a full experience of the present. So quiet, still, subtle, concentrated engagement here. And then you'll see your knot in a very different perspective. You'll see it with different eyes, with different wisdom, with a different heart. And it's very different to look at your life from a settled and peaceful heart than it is to look at it from a contracted and scared mind. So just drop down and feel and be here with it. But then we know, of course, that there are knots and concerns and strong feelings that arise that you can't put aside. And then the practice always is to meet that. Turn towards what's happening. Remember, awakening beckons us in everything. So no need to turn away from anything if it's, you can't put it up on the shelf for later. But we turn towards it. But we turn towards everything as a present moment experience. We turn towards how it's manifesting in the present moment. So if you're thinking about some past event that's really difficult for you and you're still struggling with it, we turn towards not the event that happened some time ago, we turn towards the present moment manifestation of that concern, the present moment process of thinking, the present moment emotions, the present moment contractions of the body, the things that are happening here and now, and then we open to that and feel that. Let that register. And make space for it, make it be there. But how we receive it, how we are mindful and aware of everything, we want to create the right conditions for receiving it. And one of the conditions I said earlier is to be open to it, simple about it, non-discursive about it, just be there. Another way of saying the same thing is for things which are difficult and like fear, we can have a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety that we carry with us, and important, you know, that bubbles up sometimes in practice. So how do you open to that? How are you present for that? And a very powerful way is thinking that to approach the mindfulness practice towards fear, that your job is to help your fear feel safe. Let it be safe for the fear to be there. It won't feel safe if you're trying to fix it. It won't feel, because then you're trying to get rid of it. It won't feel safe because then it'll feel like it's not allowed to be there. It's not supposed to be there. It won't feel safe if you criticize it, if you blame it. It won't be safe if you're trying to push it away or if you're embarrassed by it. How can you help the fear feel safe so that it has its time in the sun? So it can be in the sun and feel the warmth. It can be seen and known. Or if you have resentment and anger, help it feel safe. Not so it can just, you know, throw the dishes across the floor, across the room. That's where the restraint part is good. Leave the dishes alone. But feel your anger open to that. Help it feel safe. So it, in the context of your practice, where you're somewhat self, you know, contained, you let the anger be there and you get out of the way. And part of the art of this is how not to perpetuate it, to open to it. And that's why the silent mind is important, the ability to silently open to it and feel and sense the physicality, the sensations of fear and anger and whatever it might be. And that silent mind, because generally, these kinds of difficult emotions get perpetuated or fueled by our thinking, our stories. We're telling ourselves stories or ideas, or we add meaning to it, or this means to, or our projections into the future. But if we can be aware of these emotions silently, then we're probably not going to feed it so much. And then the process that it has to go through has a chance to unfold without our interference, without our, you know, doing something. And this silent mind, the silent awareness part, the silent part of awareness, also supports the cultivating of the beneficial states that arise through meditation practice. To be aware of your breathing, or to be aware of your steps as you do walking meditation, and to certainly recognize that and see and understand, have the cognitive recognition of what's there, but to have that cognitive noting of awareness be like the beginning of a process of an opening and sensing, what's this experience? A silent awareness. And that silent awareness begins to make space in the mind and the heart for qualities like concentration or settledness or relaxation or joy or well-being to begin bubbling up there as well. The kind of good qualities of mind that are the biofeedback system saying, oh yes, this is the way forward. This is what's helpful. Now I'm getting settled. Now I'm getting concentrated. Now I'm getting more mindful of it. Oh, this feels good. But if we are being mindful and there's always thinking, always discursive thoughts going on, always second-guessing or judging or evaluating or telling stories about even the experience of breathing, was that the right exhale I should have had? You know, I don't know if that was quite right. I think I kind of interrupted the exhale just before the end. I'm always controlling my breath. And what if I try next time I exhale? Oh, I missed that inhale because I was planning the exhale. And so the mind is thinking. And how to have some silence in the mind that's not forced. And one of the ways to make silence which is not forced is to not expect it to last very long. It's kind of like if you're on a skateboard, maybe a bicycle is safer, and you just kind of like, you know, push, kick the foot against the ground, and the bicycle glides for a while, and then it stops or slows down. Then you push again, and it glides. Push again, and it glides. So you open to a silent, mindful awareness of this. And let your mind be silent to really take it in. And that's just like one little push. It's not going to last that long. But you'll glide along, and then the thoughts will come back. And one of the examples of or illustrations for this idea of a silent mind, I don't know if it works for all of you, but if you try to listen to a sound, a faint sound far in the distance, I think that some people will close their eyes and will let their mind become really quiet so they can try to hear it. And you can't force it. Because that forcing just makes the inner static that interrupts with the sound. Let the mind become quiet. Just for that one little push, for that little bit, as long as it lasts, so you can feel that experience it more fully. Ah. And then you do it again. Ah, like that. Whatever it might be. And in the process of doing that, we get to feel or sense or know what our experience more and more deeply. We feel the texture of it, the flavor of it, the fullness of each experience. It's a fascinating process. It's also a very deep process. That's supported by the condition of trusting the process, having trust in this unfolding, Having the trust where you're willing to open to whatever happens. One of the, they say that this natural process, that when there's this faith, that gives birth to delight or joy. And I saw that in myself when I was practicing in Burma. I was doing walking meditation, and it's funny, you know, that I think of myself as not very good at walking meditation. You know, sitting meditation is where I get concentrated much more, and walking meditation is much harder to get concentrated. But a lot of my great insights happen in walking meditation. Isn't that kind of nice? So, you know, it's where you least expect it. But anyway, I was doing walking meditation, and I had this realization that when I'm clearly mindful of something, a clear comprehension of what's happening in the moment, really there for it, that in that moment of clear awareness, I'm free of whatever I know. It's a freedom right there. And then the next thought I had was, well, I know how now, in theory, I can be mindful of every experience I have. And when I thought that, then the next thought was, that means, in theory, I can be free anywhere and everywhere I go if I'm mindful. And then I became so happy. This is pretty good. I didn't think I could just actually do it so quickly and automatically, but it gave me so much enthusiasm and faith and trust and of the potential and possibility of this process. And the last thing I'll say is that I do believe that it's a phenomenal gift that you give yourself to not be in conflict with anything that bubbles up here for yourself in your immediate present moment experience. It's a phenomenal gift to then be willing to let it be there and be seen, to let it have its time in the sun of awareness. Whatever is here, step back and listen to it with a silent mind. Feel it with a silent mind. Sense it. Let it show itself. Let it reveal itself. It's a gift because that allows who you are, what's inside of you, it makes room for it to continue whatever natural process it is. Nothing is static, nothing is fixed. Everything is part of a process of unfolding. If it's there, it's part of a process. And if we can get out of the way, allow it to unfold, allow it to deepen or resolve or show itself. In the midst of everything that happens, there is an invitation. Come here and be free. Accept the invitation and see if you can find your freedom in the midst of anything and everything. So, sit quietly for a few minutes.